Mr. Hohnmeier.
May it please the court, counsel. Dan Hansmeier on behalf of the appellant, Michael Adams. The issue in this appeal is whether Mr. Adams is an armed career criminal. It matters because he received a 15-year mandatory minimum sentence. He is not an armed career criminal. It's a 10-year statutory max. The issue turns on the classification of two prior convictions from Illinois in 1981 and 1982. He was released from imprisonment on those convictions in December 1984. These could be violent felonies. The question is whether they are exempt under 921A20, the Restoration of Civil Rights exemption. There are essentially two things that we are asking this court to do. The first is overrule its precedent, particularly Melvin v. United States and United States v. Walden. The second thing we're asking this court to do is then extend its decision in Buckmeyer v. United States from the restoration by letter context to the restoration by statute context.
That would require overruling a bunch of other decisions, would it not?
That's a fair statement.
Now, have other circuits disagreed with Melvin and Walden?
Yes, absolutely. There are at least, there are five circuits who disagree, well, with one aspect. There are so many conflicts in this area, which I'm sure you know, Judge Easterbrook, but the conflict at issue with Melvin and Walden is the decision to look to, it's a temporal decision, to look at the date of the underlying criminal conduct in the 922G offense to determine whether the state of the convicting jurisdiction's law, instead of looking backward to the state of the law when rights were restored. And so this court is on its own. Out of the six circuits that have decided the issue, this is the only court that looks at the date of the underlying 922G offense. The other five circuits look to the date of restoration.
I'm kind of lost.
Okay.
The holding of the district court here, and indeed the holding in Melvin against Walden, was there was no restoration of rights.
There was no restoration of rights.
Exactly. I can imagine a restoration of rights if the sequence is defendant is convicted, defendant is released, Illinois passes a law saying your right to hold firearms is restored, and later Illinois passes a law revoking that. Then we have an interesting temporal question. But as I understand what happened here, I think this was true in Melvin and Walden, the state amended its law before the defendant was released. So the defendant is convicted, loses his right to hold firearms, and on the day he walks out of prison, he might or might not, as a matter of Illinois law, get his right to possess firearms back. But as it happened, on the day he walked out of prison, under Illinois law, he did not get his right to possess firearms back, just as a matter of Illinois law. So it doesn't look in that sequence like there's any temporal question at all.
Well, you're partially correct. You're correct. That is our situation. That is not the situation in Melvin and Walden. The individuals in Melvin and Walden were released at a point at which they could possess firearms. So that's the circuit split. And those defendants, Melvin and Walden, were in the exact same position as the defendant in Osborne in the Fifth Circuit case, which deals with Illinois law. So that's where the circuit split comes. But you're correct that our case differs from those cases in that when Mr. Adams stepped outside of prison, Illinois had already changed its law. That's correct. And that is where our second point comes in.
Well, it wasn't even close. He had 5 years in addition to that before he got his right back, right?
Wasn't even close.
Sometime period after you get out of prison?
Under Illinois law at the time of the conviction, his civil rights were restored the day he left prison, and his right to possess a firearm was restored 5 years from that date.
And so he's more than 5 years short.
he's more than 5 years short.
Yeah, because he's in prison when he was.
Well, but the question isn't under 921A20 in this circuit whether there was an actual restoration. Because if that was the question, Buckmeyer would be decided differently. Because Buckmeyer, his right to possess a firearm has never been restored, yet his convictions can't be used. So I think asking whether his rights were actually restored is the wrong question to ask.
It's the right question to ask unless you're in a case where there was a written statement sent to the defendant. If the state sends an incorrect written statement, the written statement controls. That's what the statute says. Otherwise, you just look to what state law provides. And your problem is that on the date Mr. Adams walked out of prison, he did not get the right to possess firearms, and no one ever told him otherwise.
But the argument, here's where Buckmeyer comes in. The argument is, the logic behind Buckmeyer is that an individual is told that his civil rights are restored, and he's not told of the firearm restriction. Mr. Adams, when he pleaded guilty in 1981 and 1982, the law told him that on your day of release from prison, your civil rights are restored. It also told him within 5 years of that
date. No person told him. You're not going to get anywhere doing this. The statute itself expressly distinguishes cases where the state sends you a document saying something from cases where it doesn't.
I don't.
And you may not like that, but that's what the statute does.
The statute does not say anything about letter versus what constitutes a conviction. I don't see a distinction between a statute.
Well, you may not see it, but it's there. It says what constitutes a conviction depends on state law, and there then follows an exception.
Yes.
For what happens if you get a document, a formal pardon, a notice of some kind, and under the clause governing the exception, it matters what's in that document. That's an exception to the rule that state law governs. No document was given here, so we're in the rule that state law governs. And under Illinois law, your client never had the right to possess firearms. That's the problem for you here.
The problem I have with that is that in Karen v. United States, the Supreme Court decision in 1998, the court addressed an issue. The issue is whether the individual's civil rights were restored by statute. And the court did not say that that was impermissible or improper. And in fact, the court said, Massachusetts restored petitioner's civil rights by operation of law rather than by pardon or the like. This fact makes no difference. Nothing in the text of 921A20 requires a case-by-case decision to restore civil rights to this particular offender. The way I read that is that a restoration by statute is covered by 921A20, and the statute does not distinguish between a letter restoration and a statutory restoration. And I think that's the problem with the cases where this court has drawn the line between statute and letter, is that those cases preceded the Supreme Court's decision.
Well, that sounds like you want us to overrule essentially every case we have ever decided under 921A20.
That's not true.
And the more ambitious you get, the less plausible the outcome is.
I understand. I, that's not true. I think it is a complicated thing, but really,
it's actually a perfectly straightforward statute.
Well, anyway,
Illinois has managed to complicate things by sending a sequence of inaccurate letters to people.
Yeah.
In other states that have given accurate advice to people, it's been perfectly simple to administer.
I understand that. I do think that this court should, at a minimum, look at Melvin and Walden in light of the other circuits. Whether that helps Mr. Adams or not, I think it is important to get that right. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Hartzler.
Well, once again, I think the court is familiar with the timing of this.
We're all too familiar with 921A20. I wish we were less so.
Yes. The only point I'd make is that Melvin was even a tougher case. Melvin was the case in which the defendant's rights were restored and he did have an opportunity to possess a firearm for a short period of time, and then that opportunity or that right was taken away by the new statute. That's really the only distinction. That's a tougher case than this case. This case, as you've identified, he never had the right to bear a firearm. I think the timing of it decides it. Again, if the court has no further questions, I'll rely on my brief.
Doesn't look like it. Mr. Hansmeier, there's not much for you to rebut. Thank you very much. Case is taken under advisement.